Scaling any business is about figuring out the how part.
Hello, everybody. It's Jake Stenzana, host of the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, father, six best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbo. Gino, how's it going?
Mr. Stenzana, I'm doing great. How you doing, bro?
You know, always making it happen, big man. Got a special guest today. We're going to be getting outside of our comfort zone a little bit. Today's guest is Rich Danby. Rich enjoyed a 15-year career in the television industry before making the leap to real estate investing full-time. Over the years, he has grown a large portfolio and successfully applied many investment strategies, including rent-to-own, flips, Airbnb. We could ask some questions about that. You got some things in the horizon there. Wholesaling, land development, and private lending. So without further ado, Rich, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jake. Thank you, Gino. It's great to be here.
All right. So you were a cool television guy. Why'd you make the jump into real estate here?
Yeah, interesting enough, when I first started investing in real estate, I didn't have a clue what I was doing. And I was led by the hand by my realtor at the time while working in television broadcasting. And then when my wife was pregnant with our son, who is now just about to turn 12, I realized that I had to do something different, that I couldn't rely on TV anymore because times were changing. YouTube was coming up. Netflix didn't even exist, but I saw the writing on the wall. Mm-hmm. So I knew I had to do something to prepare myself for the inevitable, which was eventually I could be losing my job at any moment, like many of my friends did across the country. So I knew that real estate was the way that I made the most money, but really it was just luck. There was no strategy. It was no skill, that's for sure. And I decided, okay, I need to do something different. So I started to pursue real estate education. And then eventually over time, as it grew and I started to become pretty successful at it, I really was just having a hard time managing both staying in TV and working on my real estate business. So I did a project and the project was very successful. And my wife said to me, Rich, it's time for you to spread your wings and fly. And so after she gave me that vote of confidence, which I really did need because, you know, I felt this pressure for certainty, right? Because my wife wants certainty just as much as everybody else does. And so I tried to navigate between both for a long time. And then once she said that to me, I knew it was time. And then I just took the leap and I've been doing full-time real estate ever since.
Rich, let's go back before TV. I was reading your story, Success Habits of Super Achievers. I think everyone's got to go out there and grab it. Rich is highlighted in the book. He's got a great story. Did I hear a little DJing, a little bartending, a little selling cars?
Yeah. That's right.
let's get back to it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I did bars, cars, and TV. And ironically
like
enough,
show.
Exactly. And ironically enough, my wife did the same thing, bars, cars, and TV. She just did it after I did because she's younger than me. So we never actually met each other while I was doing it because I was gone by the time she was entering. But ironically enough, we knew a ton of the same people. But yeah, you know, I had a job in Canada here working at a restaurant called Swiss Chalet. And that was the last job I had before I went to television broadcasting. And I quit. I burned the boats, as Tony Robbins says, because I knew that I really wanted to succeed in television broadcasting. So the last semester of school, I quit that job. And then a few months later, I ended up getting a career in television broadcasting, and I never looked back since. So it was good memories of bars, cars, and TVs, and still tons of friends to this day.
So this theme of the show should be called Bars, Cars, TV, Drugs, and Food. You know why? You got the pizza guy, the pizza guy, and the drug rep. If the three of us can get into real estate and become successful, then I think anybody can do it, right? What was the ultimate drive is you're saying, oh, I got to get out of the job. But what did you like about real estate? What really attracted you to real estate?
Yeah, everything. I you know what it is? It's the hunt. This is what people say about the people who know me best know they say I'm a modern day hunter. And that I love the chase. You know, I love the chase of creating a deal. I love finding deals. I love putting deals together. I love raising capital for deals. You know, I have no skills when it comes to painting. We were talking a little earlier about interior design. I have no artistic talents. I cannot sing. I can't dance. I have zero talents whatsoever.
And you can't fix an air conditioner, can you?
No, I can't. I can barely change a furnace filter. My wife says, "You're pretty." Every time something comes up. We need to call my dad. That's what Christina says. But no, I don't have any of those skills. But the passion for real estate, once I made the commitment that I wanted to, you know, get into it on a more full-time effort, I joined an organization in Canada called the Real Estate Investment Network. And when I went there the first time and I started to hear the stories of what other people were achieving, it just inspired me so much. And the passion from that point forward, it just never went away, especially when I then started to move into the role of mentoring others and speaking on stages across North America. It just lit me up. So it's just a topic I'm so passionate about. I have to edit myself whenever family comes over to make sure that I'm not talking about real estate.
So before we get into the mentorship aspect of it, because I think that's truly important. It helped Jake and myself out tremendously. We continue to get mentored to this day. What skills do you see yourself that you have? Because, you know, you got the bars and the cars and TV. It looks like there's a big sales component to it, right? I mean, there's a huge sales component. What other skills do you think someone getting into the real estate space needs?
Yeah, I think, as you said it, it's either you know you're good at sales or you know you're not good at sales. And then the skill that you need is the ability to identify what you're good at and what you're not good at. So for me, sales was something that I started with very young. One of my first jobs was selling flowers door to door. "Hi, my name's Rich. I'm from the student employment program. Would you like to help me out? It's only $3, right? I did that door to door and I sold a ton of flowers. And little did I know that that was the foundation for things to come. But definitely sales is a part of it. If you're not selling a product, you're selling yourself. And in most cases, you're selling both. So once I mastered those skills, it's really relationships. Everything is relationships. It's your ability to connect with others. And I find if you can do that, doors just open up.
But how did you get into TV? What was the attraction from TV? You're going from sales to TV. What led you down that path?
Yeah, I am a big football fan and I grew up in a town called Hamilton, Ontario, and they have the Hamilton
Define
Tiger
football.
Cuts there.
Define football for us.
Define football. What do you mean?
Are we talking about football or are we talking about like football? What are we talking about here? Are we talking about like the pigskin or are we talking about something else?
No, we're talking about football. I don't know where you're taking that, but I'm sticking with football.
All right, man.
I played football back in the day and I enjoyed watching football live, you know, live sports. We have CFL here in Canada.
Okay, we're talking about football. That's what I was wondering. All right, good.
Yes, football. Yes, that's what we're talking about. Yes, Jake. Yeah, I used to go to these games and I would look up in the stands and I would see that there were camera guys up there getting paid. And I would think to myself, you know, these guys are getting paid to come to this game and I'm paying to come to this game. This just doesn't add up for me. There's a way I can come to this game for free. I grew up in the north end of Hamilton. It's kind of a rougher area, very blue collar. So, you know, I was often thinking of these ways. How can I get out of this? So it started with that. I remember that being my first thought of wanting to enter into some form of television broadcasting. And then, you know, I've always been a good talker. I've always been good at sales. I've always presented relatively well. And so somebody just said, you know, there's this television broadcasting program. I think that you would be interested in it. And that's kind of where it started.
So from there, you had talked about your previous, when you were younger, about mentorship. How has mentorship really affected your life? And, you know, discuss mentors going forward.
Yeah, mentorship is everything. I mean, most people, they tend to look at mentorship or coaching often as an expense. They don't look at it as an investment. And there's two types. There's the one that you pay for, the coach, and then there's the mentor who just shows up. And I happen to be very blessed at a young age that I had people just show up in my life who mentored me and molded me into the person that I am today. It started with my older brother, Brad. He's a couple of years older than me. He was mentoring me literally from the time I could walk. And that's what I remember about him. He taught me how to be a good person. He taught me how to love myself. He taught me how to respect others. I watched him model that behavior. And back then in the 70s, you know, he was combing his hair this way. I'm combing my hair this way. He was combing his hair down the middle. I'm combing my hair down the middle. So I copied everything he did. He wasn't an official mentor, but he was the youngest mentor that I had. And then from there, it just, you know, I've been very blessed that God has dropped really good people into my life. And those people have mentored me every step of the way. And now I have the ability to, if they don't show up, I go find them. And I have no issue with investing in them as well, because I realize I can fast forward my mistakes by 10 years if I just jump into it and go find somebody who's already done what it is that I'm looking to do.
I love that. Let's talk about your first real estate deal. What did that look like?
Yeah, my first real estate deal, actually, I had no money. I was 23 years old, and I was with this girl that I was dating, and her mom wanted to help out her daughters. So she gave a down payment so that we could buy a property together. It was a side-by-side double, and we severed legally the property. And then a year later, our realtor came to us and said, "Hey, Rich, we have some people who want to live in the area because of the community center across the street. Would you consider selling?" So we ended up selling the property. We made a $66,000 profit on our side. And then I ended up buying a triplex with that and ended up refinancing, paying back the loan. And it just, that's how it started. So there was no skill. There was no strategy. I had no money. I probably would be renting today if that, well, that's not true. I would have figured it out. but realistically, it, you know, I had nothing to do with it. It was all good fortune. And, you know, I just was fortunate enough to make some good decisions
after that. There
was something
there, though. It made sense to you. You could taste it early on that there was something, there was more to it, right? Yeah.
Well, only after I received the check for $66,000.
That helps.
When I received that check, I then knew, okay, this is the way.
Yeah.
And what is your brother doing currently now? Is your brother in real estate, or what occupation is he in?
No, my brother's a nurse. No, he is. He's a person who is just so good at loving others and being of service to others. It started with me as a kid, and it's just part of his genetic fiber. He can't help himself. He just absolutely loves people, and he loves to be of service to them. So yeah, he's a fantastic nurse, and
that's awesome.
Fantastic guy.
So you start out with the duplex there, going to a triplex. What niches of real estate do you really gravitate towards?
Yeah, I really enjoy taking properties that are beaten up and renovating them, refinancing them, and keeping them. That's ultimately, it's the Burr strategy. And I really do enjoy that. I've done, as you said in your intro, I've done all sorts of different strategies, but I feel like that one's been really good to me overall, because I live in a market where, you know, as time goes on, the mortgage gets paid down, you get a little bit of cash flow every month, and you get the appreciation. So I feel like everybody needs a home at some point. And, you know, as the demand, if you live in a market where the population is growing, then, you know, as prices move up, people typically start looking at those smaller rental properties as a way for them to offset their mortgage. So I just feel like they're safe and secure, and, you know, they're COVID proof as well, as you know, as I found out. So that's been my niche for the most part.
What is the difference between the markets in Canada and the US markets? Do you invest in the US or just Canada alone?
You know, I was talking to my wife about this yesterday, and was talking about, you know, 2008 to 2012 and the opportunities that were in it. I had a ton of friends who were jumping into the US, and I feel like at that time, my mindset just wasn't there. It felt too risky to just jump into a complete, you know, another country where the market was falling apart. It seemed like buying a stock during a market crash. So I didn't do it. I sat on the sidelines and I watched. And now I can tell you, I'm filled with regret. I wish I would have done it. I wish I would have jumped in. But, you know, everything happens for a reason. I can't complain. I created my own strategy and I stuck with it, and it's worked out really well. So, yeah, I haven't been in the U.S. buying properties, but it's definitely something I'm going to be paying attention to as the fallout of COVID plays out.
And you're buying these properties. How are you financing them? You know, the Burr strategy, you refining them out, going to getting agency debt on a big portfolio, or are you going to a community bank? How does that look?
To start out, everything I do is with private money. So I've been good at raising capital. So you need 20, 25% down when you're buying something. So I've been able to raise all of that money. I've raised all the renovation money. And then I just go to credit unions or B lenders for the 80% remaining or 75% remaining for that first mortgage. And then as investors come in, they typically don't leave. So then it just allows me to keep going and going. I don't actually have a money problem. I have the opposite problem. I don't have enough time. So, it's good to be able to have built that up over time. And it was one of the reasons I decided to become a mortgage lender last year, because I started to slow down a little bit, and but I still have the resources available to me of people who have invested with me or through me. And so I made that available to others as well.
I love that. So you're doing what we call multifaceted multifamily. I hold up the book here, the Honeybee. You're creating complementary streams of revenue, which is amazing. Let's dive into that a little bit. So you're doing private money. You probably have a CapEx team doing these properties. You have the assets themselves. Now you have the mortgage. How did you come up with the idea to put all this together?
I just watched other people making money. That was it. You know, in the real estate industry, you walk in and you buy a property and you put up all that risk to buy. And then while you're there, sometimes when you make mistakes, you see that the only people getting paid are the construction people that you hired, right? Mm-hmm. And they think you're rich, but you know, sometimes along the way, you're going to have failures. And it was through those failures that I learned that, hey, you know, I better kind of come up with some other strategies and start investing in some other things. So I did launch a pizzeria, I bought a pizzeria. I didn't launch it. I bought a pizzeria. I opened a construction company. My wife is a realtor now. I just launched a painting company last week. So yeah, there are many ways that you can get involved. And really for me, it's based on the power of my network, right? When you have a really good network and you've built up a good reputation for yourself over the years, people do want to do business with you. So if you can provide them a secondary solution to another problem that they have, then why not, right? Mm-hmm. As long as you can find the who that can take care of the operations of the business for you.
Yeah, I love that. Rich, a lot of students and community members are listening to the podcast right now, and they're wondering, how do I get started? Now, Rich has got all these different streams of revenue. He's got all this capital that's in excess. He even has time to start a mortgage business. How is he doing this? How do I get my foot started in real estate? Where do I go? What's the first thing I should do?
Yeah, the first thing you should do is get off Google. It's a never-ending circle. You're just going to go from one page to another to another. So really, I think for me, it started with like picking a specific network that I'm going to be a part of, or mm-hmm. find a specific mentor or coach that I can hire. So many people come to me and they ask about coaching, and I say, what are your goals? And they say 100 doors, 50 doors, 200 doors. And their goal is about doors, but they have no idea how they're going to get there. They have no idea what it's going to do for them. They have no idea what that actually is going to work out to in dollars and cents at the end of all of those acquisitions. And so I try to help them get clear on it. So I think the first step is to really get clear on what it is that you actually want. And then find somebody who can teach you a strategy that will help you get there. And for most people, they'll listen to a podcast like this, and they'll think, oh my God, I want to do that. And then, you know, if they try to jump into it without advising anyone else, they'll quickly find out that maybe they're more designed to be a connector, or maybe they're more designed to be a passive investor, because this isn't an easy road. This is a very challenging road. Yes, at the end of it, there's a lot of success and, you know, but you've seen the iceberg image where, you know, all of the struggle that happens underneath the surface of the water. Mm-hmm. This is exactly what this industry is like. So I think clarity with talking to the right people and being willing to spend the money to invest in yourself. It's not an expense. It's an investment. And when you find the right coach or mentor, it is the best money you could ever spend.
Well, there's a few things, Jake, and all the listeners out there that Rich has said that's truly important. We don't lack clarity. We lack motivation. When we're unclear or when we're afraid of something, we don't take that next step. We don't know how to take that next step. And I want everyone to have a paradigm shift right now. Real estate is not just real estate. At Jake and Gino, we create multifamily entrepreneurs. You know, Rich is an amazing entrepreneur. He's not in real estate. He can't even fix an air conditioning. He doesn't know how to lay tile, but he knows how to asset manage and he knows how to raise capital. Those are the skills that are going to get you paid, not changing tiles at $25 an hour or unclogging a toilet. We need to do that in the beginning. We need to have the IMA mentality and do that. But ultimately, to have the clarity and to know why you want 100 doors, to know why real estate, it's really an amazing business where you can start scaling up and adding and become and you know, employing other people to work with you. And that's an amazing, for me, when Jake and I started scaling up, we had that paradigm shift. We're like, it's not just us. We can actually create an amazing business. And the mentorship really helped us as far as getting different coaching, different programs out there. We didn't know. We just thought we were buying assets. And all we were looking for was a little bit of cash flow. We didn't even look at any of the other amazing benefits that real estate provided. So I appreciate that answer. Now, you've raised a ton of capital. let's go back to the first deal you raised money for. And then I want to know what your strategy is or what tips you can give the listeners on raising capital.
Yeah, one of the first deals I did when it came to raising capital was I went out and I raised money from an investor, somebody that I knew that raised their hand and said, I'm interested in investing with you. And my wife turned to me and she said, what are you doing? Why are you borrowing money when you don't need money? We have tons of money. And I said, yeah, I know, but I need a resume and I don't have one right now. I need references because I know where I'm going. And so if that's what it takes in order for me to have that referral of somebody who is pretty connected, that's going to say, yes, it went well, then I don't mind paying for that. And there is going to come a time when I'm not going to have money. So I got to plan ahead. And I thought that was a good strategy in a way to do it. And it did, it worked. I mean, you have a referral and then another referral and another referral. And eventually people stop asking for referrals. But that I think was a pretty good strategy to get started if you have funds. And if you don't have funds, then, you know, you just think of what problem can I solve? And I think a lot of times when people get into the real estate industry, they set up all sorts of meetings for coffee, but they don't understand what the outcome is. They don't know what they're selling. So they get out there and they're like, that was a great meeting. Okay, I look forward to doing business with you, but they have no plan, no idea. So it's just wasted time. They just spin around in a circle. Mm-hmm. So I think once you can figure out the problem that you solve and you can articulate that in a way that doesn't sound salesy, and doesn't take up a ton of a person's time, then raising capital should be pretty easy.
Mm-hmm. Have you used, we have in the US self-directed IRAs. Do you raise money from people's investment accounts,
yeah,
savings? Yes. Where do you like to target?
Yeah, so if you're raising money from people's investment accounts, then it has to be tied specifically to an asset. And a lot of times I'll buy an asset and then I'll refinance it and then sometimes I'll sell it. So in that scenario, I have to keep attaching the money to an asset, which is fine. I do that. Mm-hmm. And then the other way is to borrow money through a promissory note where that's cash in hand. There's a lot more flexibility with that because that can make up the down payment, that can handle the renovations. There's all sorts of flexibility there. So I do either or. It depends on where the person's funds are coming from.
Mm-hmm. Before we go to the short answers, my last question is, where do you see more real estate market in the next 12 to 24 months? You're not going to have any problems with getting debt because you're raising money, but what obstacles do you see in this next 12, 24 months of this market cycle?
I don't see obstacles if you're a buyer. I see obstacles if you're a seller. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's unfortunate of what's happening with COVID around the world, but coming out of COVID, if you're prepared and you're ready, if you have taken the assets that you do have and leveraged them properly, if you've tried to refinance them, pull money out, get money available, cash is king. Cash is going to be king. Right now, we don't even know the impact that's fully going to happen because we're locked in our houses. We're not walking around downtown seeing exactly what's been going on and how it's impacted our communities. But in the next 12 to 24 months, there's going to be a lot of people who are not going to be able to pay their bills and they're going to be looking for an out. They're going to be looking to access that equity in their property, and that's going to present some tremendous opportunities to buy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, gang, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Are you looking for ways to improve your life?
Here at Jake and Gino, our mission is to empower students through financial education and the vehicle of multifamily investing.
Yes, Jake. We agree that a person with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
We've created our proprietary three-step framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right, that we teach to our community. This framework, along with education, our one-on-one mentorship, on-site boot camps, and the amazing community, has propelled our students to massive success.
We've all been there. We've had so many students that have been able to shift their mindset, overcome limiting beliefs, and set a clear path to achieve their goals. Whether you're currently fixing and flipping, wholesaling, or buying single-family rentals, and you know that multifamily investing is the right vehicle for you, I encourage you to visit jakeandgino.com/apply to schedule your complimentary consultation with our team. And I want to let you know this isn't a high-pressure sales call. It's really just a discovery call to get to know each other better and see if we're a good fit for working together. And if for any reason we're not a good fit, our team has tons of resources we will share with you to help you along your journey.
If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and schedule your call now. All right, we are back. Want to talk about your success habits a little bit. What would you say your best habit, your best personal habit for success is?
Hanging out with the right people. That's really what it comes down to. I feel like if you can feed yourself with content every day, whether it's through somebody that is a personal friend that you talk to, or whether you're just getting it from online. So there's on Spotify, they have a motivational playlist. So I'll play something like that to just to set myself right for the day. Anybody who is teaching you how to perform at a higher level, there's going to be something in it. There's going to be a nugget. So that's typically what I'm looking for every day.
That's a great answer, because my boy right there is my motivation. Every day I need a little bit of loving. I pick up the phone, 585. I'm not going to say the rest of the phone number. I hit him up. It's all about proximity. And I totally agree with you, Rich. As I get older, I realize that you can be in one set of circumstances or you can be in another. You can hang out with people who will bring you down, or you can hang out with people who will bring you up. And if you're strong enough, maybe you can bring these people that are bringing you down to bring you up. But why do you need that? Find people who are like-minded. That's why we have the Jake and Gino community, because we want like-minded people. We don't want somebody to say, hey, real estate's too risky. No, we want to say, hey, how can we get into real estate? How can we make this thing work? And that power of proximity, as Robbins and all these other motivational speakers, it's truly impactful, because every day you're working on your levels of energy. You're working on how you can get things done, and that you're looking at solutions. You're not looking at problems. People who are like-minded, who really want to go somewhere, are always looking at that and saying, hey, there's not a problem in COVID. Like you just said, there's going to be an opportunity. Most of us are looking at it as, wow, what problems are going to arise? And I love your answer. You said, no, there's going to be a lot of opportunity, and you're surrounded with the right people. But can you imagine if you're surrounded with all those people who see that what problems on the horizon, you're not going to take action. You're not going to become successful in that medium.
Yeah, absolutely. I find a quick filter for me is just the words, the problem. Because I am an ideas guy. I throw out ideas all the time. I can't help it. That's where I live. My mind just works that way. And whenever people respond to your ideas and suggestions with, well, you know what the problem is, then I'm like, that's a filter for me, because I don't want to be focusing on problems. I want to focus on how, like solutions. You know, you spend 85% focusing on the solution and only 15% focusing on the problem. Let's address the problem and move forward. Let's go.
Yeah, we've been told by a lot of our team members, Jake, I'm sorry, that another idea, Gino, come on, you're killing me. So it's a great place to be. Sometimes it's a curse, because your mind is always working, but you're always in thought mode, thinking of ways to create value. You're not chasing money, Rich. You're chasing opportunity, which is a big difference than, you know, 95% of the rest of the population, where there's just chasing money. Chasing opportunity is a great place to be in life.
Absolutely.
Well, to that opportunity point, I may be wrong in saying this, but I feel like the other day I read that there's more people right now delinquent on their mortgages than back in 08, but there's the forbearance program going on. So who knows, you know, where things go in the future, but I completely, especially, you know, in these single family houses or the smaller ones, if you rent them out, there's going to be opportunities there. I'm going to play devil's advocate right now, because everything you guys were just saying about positivity and, you know, we're not focusing on the negative. The thing that blew my mind about this interview, and I got to call you out on it, and I might just be missing something here, but I love the multiple streams of revenue. I love all the different businesses, but painting, are you serious? These are the most challenging people, painters, that I've ever dealt. What the hell are you doing, Rich? Doing a painting company, man. Come on. Like, what is it? You gotta shed some light, because that just, everything else made sense until you told me you started a painting company. Like, I just need to know what the hell's going on.
I am so happy you asked me that question, because I'm going to be sharing this video with my brother.
He needs a bigger challenge in life, Gino, is what he needed. That's what it is.
This is it. Okay, so my brother-in-law is a cop. He comes to me a couple of months ago and he says, I want to start a painting company. I said, that's the worst idea I've ever heard. I implore you not to do it. No, absolutely not. And I said, do you understand what it's like working with these guys? They're like, it can be very unreliable. It's a lot of stress. You're going to have constant turnover of employees. Everybody's going to leave you for the next dollar. There's no loyalty. It is a pain in the ass business. Don't do it.
And there's drug problems. Let's be honest. Like, there's drug problems in the painting industry. Like, I don't know why, but I've seen it. So
it's everywhere. I mean, it's in all of the trades as a whole, right? So I totally agree. I said the exact same thing to him, but he is ambitious and he wants to get into being an entrepreneur. He's been a police officer for a few years now. And he's my wife's younger brother. I love him. He's just an amazing guy. And, you know, he's been the one person I've mentored all these years that has never been a paid client. I just do it because he's just such a great guy and I want to see him succeed. So he came back to me a few weeks later and he said, Rich, I secured a contract with one of the biggest companies in Ottawa and they're going to just feed us jobs. It's a guarantee of X amount of jobs per month. I need you. I need you to mentor me. I need you to help me set up this business. I want to be your partner. And all you got to do is just do what you do. Shake hands, smile, kiss, you know, kiss baby, shake hands, and just make those opportunities happen. Just attach your name to it and help me out. And I'll take care of all of the operations. So, you know, I say to my kids, it's never a no. It's a no because you didn't come up with the right negotiation strategy. So if you want a yes, you got to negotiate until you get a yes. And you might not get a yes, but, you know, just asking isn't going to do it. And in this case with my brother-in-law, I felt like, okay, I don't want to deal with anything related to operations, employees, staff, nothing. I don't want anything to do with that. I'll help you on the getting the business set up and I'll start calling some people and letting them know that I have a painting company. And already we started this company last week and we've secured 19 jobs already. And, you know, that's a pretty good place to start from. And he recognizes that I am going to be the silent partner for the most part. Right now I'm actively helping getting everything set up. But once things are up and running, you know, my meetings will be with him and I trust him. I trust him to be a great partner. And that's the reason I decided to proceed. But otherwise, yes, I would agree. That would be a terrible idea.
Well, here's what I'm thinking. After year one, he goes through it and he gets a taste of it. You know, maybe during the winter time, have him go get an HVAC license or a plumbing license and start that company. Cause I think he'll have a better, you know, experience with it. But anyways, that's quite interesting and good for you helping out, you know, the younger sibling there. Any tips, you know, this is, you know, very much related, any tips for scaling a company? Because I think that's, you know, we all go through like these inflection points and you know, we hit that pretty hard at about like 300 to 500 units. And we realized, oh shit, this is a business and we got to figure out what the hell we're doing. Any tips for folks scaling right now?
Yeah, you know, just with the painting business, going back to that, one of the things I had said to my brother-in-law is that, first of all, I've never run a painting business. And I said, you know, if I'm going to do this, I want to hit a certain target per month. That's what I want for myself. So in order to hit that target, I have to figure out who can help me learn how to hit that target. So I went and started making calls and asking around, and I found a guy who ran a franchise, a big, successful painting franchise. So he knew all the systems. He actually created a lot of them. And this person, I told him what my goals were. And he said they were very ambitious and that he had teams that had, as a whole, they had reached the goal. And I said, okay, great. Then that means I just need to get myself that amount of teams and put it together. So scaling any business is about figuring out the how part, right? Because if you knew, you'd already be doing it. So just going and seeking out those people and being willing to pay them. A lot of the people that I've hired, they don't market themselves as coaches. You know, I just know what I'm looking for. Like when my son's a quarterback, plays football, and his speed is not the best. So what I did was I wanted to find him a one-on-one coach. So I searched all through the city to try to find who's the fastest runner, right? Who's the fastest runner? Who's the best coach? And I went and tried to find one, and I was able to do that. And they had never coached before, and they ended up coaching my son, did an excellent job. So just go and find who it is you need and be willing to pay them. It'll save you so much time, so much money.
I think we saw on Sunday night that you don't have to be the fastest to win in the NFL, right? So there's something to be said there.
Absolutely.
Any teachable moments from transitioning, you know, and it could be any career, but you're in TV and then you transitioned from TV into real estate. Any like moments or, you know, really good experiences there that you can share with the folks that said, hey, this worked out well, or I want to share that?
I think success comes through failure, and it doesn't feel like it's working out well when you have such highs and lows. You know, you have a moment where you feel like I am a genius. I cannot believe how smart I am. I should be patting myself on the back.
$66,000 check. This is easy.
Yeah. I'm I'm a genius. I look at what I did. Right. And then you'll turn around, you'll come up with another idea and you'll fall flat on your face. So I think I've had a ton of successes along the way, a lot of things to celebrate, but I would think, you know, it's just important to know that as you fail along the way, that's actually part of the success. You can't get to success without failure. And so it's just, I would tell people to be kind to themselves. you know, be kind to yourself no matter what level you're at. And I feel like, you know, when I went to, previous to going to see Tony Robbins as an example, I didn't know about mindset and, you know, how to motivate myself and all of those things. But then when I came back from it, I did really well for a while and then, you know, kind of drifted off. So then I started judging myself, like, how come I'm not motivated and doing all those things I did after I left Tony Robbins? You know, like it kind of faded away. So like life has peaks and valleys, and COVID right now is definitely one of them. There's a lot of mental health issues, and the people who are like myself, I'm a highly motivating person. And even still, there are days where I struggle and I'm not used to having, you know, thoughts, negative thoughts, or, you know, my patterns and routines being broken up. But I would say that regardless of where you're at in your life, if you're in a peak, then, you know, look for somebody who's in a valley that you can help. And because you, when you were in that valley, it was to learn a lesson of how you can help somebody else when they're in that valley. And then when you get to the peak, you know, it's gratitude. You made it. You got to the peak. And for me, I just, the words that I live by are grateful and blessed. That's how I feel. And I try to share that and pay it forward.
So you mentioned Tony Robbins, and something I think everyone should practice is controlling your physiology, controlling your state. If you're having those negative thoughts, you're not depressed, you're doing depressed. And I'm not talking about people who are really severely mentally ill. I'm talking about just the average run of the mill. Oh, I had a rough day. Yeah. Get up, stand up. I'm doing this podcast standing up. I need energy. Take a deep breath. Your breathing is really important also. And once you can capture your physiology, it's really, really important. Don't sit down, move around. The best salespeople that I know are always walking around. They always want energy, right? And it's like you said, we said the proximity, but you can control a lot of this. Most of us don't know that. We think stuff happens to us, but figure out when you're in a state and when you're in peak, what are you doing? Try to replicate what that is that you're doing. That's why I have this podcast every week with Jake. This is my peak state. I love to be in the state because after this call goes off, I crush the rest of my day. Figure out what you like to do and start replicating that. And I know it's very difficult now during COVID, but there's other ways for you to manifest it and to do it. Rich, you probably teach and mentor because you love it. You're in peak state doing that. Us, the Jake and Gino community, it's the same thing. We have events. We had 7 events last year. That's one of the ways that we manifest our energy, and we love to do it. So figure out ways to control your physiology. Just Google state. I know Rich tells you get off Google, but just Google the word state and figure out how you can raise your state and how you can get into that state, because your life is all about the state. If you're in a great state, you're not, as what we would say in life coaching, the 7 levels of energy, right? You're not at the victim or anger. You can raise your energy from a catabolic state, which is negative and draining, to an anabolic, right? And all of a sudden, fear may turn into anger. Anger turns into taking action. And then once you start taking action, you see the opportunities, the possibilities. And that's what a great coach does. A coach allows you to see those possibilities, gets you out of that fear, makes you start thinking. And once you start thinking, you can start looking at solutions.
Rich, yeah. You know what he forgot to tell you?
What's that?
See, his wife dressed him this morning in that nice purple shirt.
You like that?
So it's also very handsome. You look good, if you look good, you feel good. Okay. So it's like she's shopping and dressing. So she knows, you know, he's got some great people on the team there helping him out too.
Dude, she hooked me up with the Untuck It.
Like,
the Untuck
It is a great thing. His face is turning a little red because he knows it's true. You know, I got
it
him.
Is true.
I got him. Hey, so you're talking about someone maybe in a valley or having a low moment. What books or book have you read in your life that made a positive impact on you, or maybe pulled you out of a lull? Is there anything that you can share to, you know, make an impact on somebody right now?
Yeah, I think everybody has read the book. Not everybody, sorry. A lot of people in the business world have read the book Think and Grow Rich. But there's another book that was written by Napoleon Hill called Outwitting the Devil. Mm. And that book, when I read it, made me realize how, you know, self-sabotage works. And, you know, how some of the negative mindset thoughts that I had were impacting my growth. Because there's going to be people watching this and thinking to themselves, I can't do this. I don't have it. I'm not smart enough. I'm not good enough. I don't know the right people. I don't have the money. They're going to have all these types of thoughts. So I think addressing the negative self-talk is a good strategy, a good place to start. And, you know, for me, as far as like how you motivate yourself to really keep going, I think that God gives us all unique gifts, and you could typically think about 2 or 3 things that are unique and special to you. Some people might be great at sales. Some people might be great at cooking. Some people might be fantastic singers, any of those things. So if you're not using your gifts to help and inspire others, that's how you're going to stay down. But if you could find a way to step into those powers, those gifts, and use them for what they're meant for, they're not for you, they're for other people. So if you can do that, then you'll find the motivation and you won't necessarily need to be constantly going to try to find a way to stay motivated.
Well said. That's fantastic. What project are you excited about right now?
Well, I'm actually most excited about my new waterfront property.
Not the
my wife and I. Not the painting.
Well, I'm sorry. I mean, I gotta let that go. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I'm excited. I'm excited about that too. But no, I'm excited actually because we've bought a few properties. Actually, I was looking at renting for the first time in many, many years because I bought a waterfront property and I have some big plans for, you know, getting it renovated. So I thought, okay, maybe we'll rent a property in between. And then I went to a rental and the guy, you know, I saw the place and what he wanted to charge. And I just did the math. This is silly. I can't do it. I'm sorry. Can't do it. So we ended up buying three properties. And because our project isn't going to be ready until December, it's almost a year long project to get completed. We've bought a few properties in between. And so right now I'm mostly excited for the waterfront property because we went there last week and, you know, yesterday I bought a snowmobile. It's showing up today. So I've never even been on a snowmobile. The guy said, would you like to try it out? Take it for a spin. I'm like, sure. How do you start it? And he goes, what?
Yeah, you're from Canada, man. This is not acceptable.
Well, you know what? I'm a city boy. So I never had a snowmobile, but now where I am, the water is frozen. There's people who are cross country skiing. There are people who are ice fishing. There are people who are snowshoeing.
Watch
out for Rich, here he comes. I'm all in. I'm like snowmobile. I met my neighbors the other day. And I saw them last night. And he's like, what? That was quick. You went and got a snowmobile already? I'm like, yeah, man, we're going to do this. Let's go. So that's my most exciting project right now. It's a personal one, but it's the time. I've been waiting for something like this for a while and building up to it. Now's the time.
Yeah. Same thing. I'd be on the lake. I don't want to be in a canoe or a kayak. Give me the jet ski. All right. I don't want to be doing the work. I want to go. No, this is great stuff. What's the best way for listeners to get a hold of you?
They could just send me an email, rich@richdanby.com.
Awesome. Gino, you want to wrap this baby up?
Jake, so picture this. We have a young 8-year-old Rich Danby. He's knocking door to door. He's selling flowers. And he knows deep down that's going to be a skill that is going to serve him really well. Fast forward to bars, cars, and TV. That gets him on the real estate journey. At 23 years old, he's with his girlfriend. They secure a duplex. He gets half the side. $66,000 check. That's when he's like, wow, this real estate thing really works. How do I get involved? But he's sitting at a football game and he's looking up and he sees those TV cameras and he's like, I'm paying. They're not. How do I get into TV? So I think that sort of derails him from the real estate, right? Because he's following his passion. Jake and Rich are really our kindred spirits. They both like cold weather. They both like football. And it's just an amazing journey, right? And then he gets into TV. And then at one point, the real estate thing starts clicking. And he says, you know what? I have to leave the passion of TV because I see Netflix. I see YouTube. I see streaming. The future is not there. The future is in real estate because it's a basic human need, right? Food, clothing, and apartments. And as you can see over this past 12 months with the COVID, I think it's come to the realization that he made the right decision and working all those years and that skill set. And what's amazing about real estate, Jake and I love apartments. Rich is in a different space. There are so many different niches in real estate. I think the moral of the story is find one niche, learn it really well, master it, and follow your passion. And ultimately, you'll get to become someone like Rich, who's out there not just giving to get, but he's seeking to serve. And the more people he serves, the more money he makes. Ironically, he's chasing money less and less, and he's making more and more. It's the story of a great life. Yeah. Yep.
Gino, I need you to be my copywriter. That was incredible.
You know what? I got to go for a wardrobe change right now. So if you guys will just excuse me. So yeah. Thanks, Rich. We really appreciate you having you on and just great, great getting to know you and, you know, continued success in all your endeavors.
Thank you, Gino. Thank you, Jake. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yep. Thanks guys.
Take care.
Take care, everybody.